Today's audiocast for Monday, August 14th, 2006 is made possible by Aviation Safety, the monthly journal of risk management and accident prevention. I'm Mike Blakeney reporting for AvWeb's Audio News. A Comair CRJ200 damaged an 8-foot fence and clipped some trees off the end of the 3,500 by 75-foot runway 26 normally used by general aviation aircraft at Bluegrass Airport in Lexington, Kentucky early Sunday. Commercial traffic uses the 7,001-foot runway 22. The plane crashed less than a mile from the end of the short runway, killing 49 of 50 people on board. When questioned in an early press conference about the clearance given to the flight, an NTSB spokeswoman said there were references to the longer runway 22, but stated that data indicated the aircraft aligned to 260 for the takeoff roll. She declined adding more details. Voice and data recorders have been recovered, but analysis will begin in earnest today. The crash left the aircraft mostly intact, but there was a post-crash fire. First Officer James Paul Heinke, 44, survived the crash. He was pulled from the shattered cockpit by a police officer first on the scene with two airport security workers. The officer was treated for burns to his arm suffered during the rescue, according to the Associated Press. By the FAA's count, there has not been a major crash in the United States since Flight 587 crashed on Long Island, New York, November 12, 2001. According to the Aviation Safety Network, it was at least the second time an airliner crew had initiated takeoff roll on the shorter runway. According to the association's report of Sunday's accident, an airliner lined up for takeoff on the shorter runway 13 years ago, but a controller caught the error and canceled the clearance. On the issue of controllers, the FAA says it will actually have 200 more air traffic controllers on duty 2 years from now compared to today's figures as it tackles the retirement bubble created 25 years ago when President Ronald Reagan fired two-thirds of the agency's controllers. However, a report on the necessity of hiring 11,800 controllers over the next 10 years also notes that given the agency's penny pinching of late, it will be extremely challenging to sustain the long-term hiring and training to meet the projected controller staffing requirement. Despite the challenges, the FAA says it's on track to keep the consoles manned and is doing so with a combination of efficiency and ramped-up hiring. According to FAA Administrator Marion Blakey, her teams are focusing on all aspects of the process, including recruitment, hiring, training, and staffing requirements. The National Air Traffic Controllers Association says the FAA's math is a little fuzzy or selective, and the reality is there are almost 1,100 fewer controllers, or 7%, on duty today than there were 3 years ago. And that's a problem because we certainly have not seen a 7% decrease in traffic volume, NATCA spokesman Doug Church told AvWeb. Church says in many locations you have fewer controllers working more traffic than ever before. Church says the FAA also seems to underestimate just how upset the membership was when working conditions, otherwise known as the FAA's contract, were imposed on them in June. Church predicts many members will head for the door as soon as their retirement numbers add up and said 25% of the controllers will be eligible to retire by the end of 2007. Three dual-engine flameouts, including one that resulted in a dead-stick landing on Beachjet 400 bizjets, have prompted the NTSB to urge immediate action to resolve the problems that are causing the failures. Dual-engine flameout is an unacceptable risk that needs to be addressed as quickly as possible, NTSB Chairman Mark Rosenker said in a news release. The flameouts occurred on July 12, 2004 near Sarasota, Florida, November 28, 2005 near Jacksonville, Florida, and on June 14, 2006 near Norfolk, Virginia. There was also one in Brazil in 2000. In two of the U.S. incidents, the pilots were able to restart at least one engine, but the crew of the third beach jet had to glide to a landing. All the landings were without injury. The flameouts occurred when the aircraft were between 38,000 and 40,000 feet and near areas of convective activity. Evidence points to an icing problem with the Pratt & Whitney JT-15D engines as the cause of the flameouts. In its news release, the NTSB says an FAA engine icing specialist notes that thunderstorms blow a lot of ice crystals into the upper airway altitudes. Pratt & Whitney did a study on the phenomenon and discovered that if pilots don't turn on the engine anti-icing gear when this is going on, ice can build up on the front inner compressor stator and cause a surge and/or flameout. In more optimistic engine news, a Texas group in the Midland-Odessa area are revving up plans to build the Orenda 600, a geared aircraft engine based on an 8-cylinder big-block Chevy racing engine. Trace Engines holds all the rights to the engine, which went into production in the late 1990s in Nova Scotia, but was dropped by Orenda Aerospace's parent company, Magellan Aerospace, about 5 years ago. According to the Odessa American, Trace Engines now expects to spend about $20 million to set up a manufacturing plant for the engine, which has achieved certification but has yet to make much impact on the commercial market. When originally developed, the engine was touted as a low-cost replacement for turbine and radial engines in the 600 horsepower range. Trace says that market still exists. The FAA has announced it will no longer mail certain airworthiness-related documents to affected owners and operators as the first stage of its program to eventually distribute all of this kind of material electronically. According to Helicopter Association International, starting last Friday, the agency stopped mailing corrections to airworthiness directives that don't trigger a new amendment number or AD number. The corrections will continue to be published in the Federal Register and on the FAA website. The agency is also trimming its postage bill by only sending mailed copies of engine-related ADs only to those who have registered those engines and not to the aircraft owners and operators referred to in the AD. Sierra Industries has obtained a Supplementary Type Certificate, STC, to install modern engines on a classic bizjet. The company says that by putting Williams FJ44-2A engines on the Cessna Citation 500 and 501 series, the 30-year-old jets can compete with modern designs in terms of performance and endurance. It calls the faster climbing, faster cruising, longer-legged creation the Stallion. The Stallion offers the exhilarating performance that comes with a substantial power increase and provides owners with a choice when it comes time to overhaul engines, Sierra CEO Mark Hufstutler said in a news release. With the 2,300-pound thrust Williams engines, the original JT-15Ds put out about 2,200 pounds, and the efficiencies inherent with more modern designs of the engines, the Stallion climbs fully loaded directly to 43,000 feet, cruises 30 to 40 knots faster, and goes about 150 to 200 nautical miles further on a tank of gas, depending on power settings. The Williams conversion costs about $1.4 million. The iconic airport labeled as the first to use that particular term will close next month. Development pressure and what appears to be an almost complete lack of community support has sealed the fate of Bader Airport in Atlantic City. A local newspaper reporter was credited as the first to use the term airport in describing the facility in 1919. The name stuck. Bader has been in continuous operation since 1910, making it one of the oldest in the U.S. College Park in Maryland opened in 1909 and saw its share of firsts, including being the launch point for the first attempt to cross the Atlantic by air. Development of Atlantic City International Airport 15 years ago shifted interest and business from Bader. Though Bader is closer to and a few minutes from casinos and beaches, there are only about a dozen aircraft now based there. Scottsdale, Arizona's Planning Commission has passed a motion that would ban landing aircraft in residential areas. Commission spokesman James Heidel said legislation with that intent had been on the books for 20 years, but the motion passed last week clarifies the old law and makes it black and white, according to a report in the Arizona Republic. The new rule fixes a problem that might hardly exist, the Republic states. Scottsdale planners say that to date only a handful of residents have landed aircraft on their properties, but the community's apparent failure to deal with the traffic issues has prompted the preemptive strike against those who might want to change that condition, and so it goes. Find all these stories and more online today at AFWeb.com. Comments on this podcast are welcome. Email us at audionews@AFWeb.com. This report has been made possible by Aviation Safety, the monthly journal of risk management and accident prevention. For more information, click on the AudioCast sponsors link. Look for AFWeb's next AudioCast on Friday, September 1. I'm Mike Blakeney. Thanks for listening.